The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter Number 13, Text Number 4, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on October 6th, 2014, in Vrindavan, India.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo
Nivasa
Toya
Dravina Atmabuddhi Tata Tata Dhavati Bho Atavyam Kvachit Sha Vajya Uttita Pangsu Dumra Disha Na Janati Raja Vala Aksha Nivastataya Dravinatma Bhutis Datastato Dhavati Bo Atavyam Kvat shit chatvat yotita pangsudumra Disho na janati rajasvelaksha Nivasatoya ravinatma buddhis Tatastato dhavati bo atavyam Shit tatvat yogita pangsadumra Disho najanati rajas velaksha Nivasa residential place Choya water Dravina wealth Atmabuddhi Who considers these things, who considers these material things, the Atma or Self, ta-ta-ta-ta, here and there, and Davati, he runs, bho, O King, Atavyam, on that forest path of material existence. Kvachitcha. And sometimes, Vajya, by the whirlwind. Uttita, raised. Pamsu, by dust. Dumra, appears smoke-colored. Disha, the directions. Na, not. Janati, knows. Rajavala Aksha, whose eyes are covered by the dust of the wind. Oh, who is captivated by his wife during her menstrual period. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My dear King, the merchant on the forest path of the material world, his intelligence victimized by home, wealth, relatives, and so forth, runs from one place to another in search of success. Sometimes his eyes are covered by the dust of a whirlwind. That is to say, in his lust he is captivated by the beauty of his wife, especially during her menstrual period. Thus his eyes are blinded and he cannot see where to go or what he is doing. Purpur. It is said that household attraction resides in the wife because sex is the center of household life. Yan maitunadi griyamedi sukham itu cham. A materialistic person, making his wife the center of attraction, works very hard day and night. His only enjoyment in material life is sexual intercourse. Therefore, karmis are attracted to women as friends or wives. Indeed, they cannot work without sex. Under the circumstances, the wife is compared to a whirlwind, especially during her menstrual period. Those who strictly follow the rules and regulations of household life engage in sex only once a month, at the end of the menstrual period. As one looks forward to this opportunity, his eyes are overwhelmed by the beauty of his wife. And thus it is said that the whirlwind covers the eyes with dust. Such a lusty person does not know that all his material activities are being observed by different demigods, especially the sun god, and are being recorded for the karma of one's next body. Astrological calculations are called Jyoti Shastra, because the Jyoti, or effulgence, in the material world comes from different stars and planets. The science is called Jyoti Shastra, the science of the luminaries. Now, the calculations of Jyoti, our future is indicated. In other words, all the luminaries, the stars, sun, and moon, witness the activities of the conditioned soul. Thus, he is awarded a particular type of body. A lusty person whose eyes are covered by the dust of the whirlwind of material existence does not at all consider that his activities are being observed by different stars and planets and are being recorded. Not knowing this, the conditioned soul commits all kinds of sinful activities for the satisfaction of his lusty desires. So here in this verse, dust is compared to lust, the dust lust that covers the eyes like a whirlwind of the conditioned soul. This is quite different from the dust of Vrindavan. This dust of Vrindavan, Prabhupada says, it is the dust from Krishna's lotus feet. It's amazing. Here we are getting all this dust, breathing it in, stepping in it, getting it all over our bodies. This is the dust from Krishna's lotus feet, Prabhupada explains. But this dust here, this is a different kind of dust. This is lust dust, not prema dust. So, how much indebted we are to Prabhupada, because lifetime after lifetime, we have been captivated by this lust dust. Running, madly running after this sex pleasure. Yan maitanadi grihamedi sukham itu cham. Adi means first. Maitun means sex. Maitanadi grihamedi sukham. The very first principle of enjoyment for the householder is sex. But what does Bhagavatam say? He tucham. He is indeed, and tucham, insignificant. It is indeed insignificant. Now, the ordinary materialistic person, if we told him that sex pleasure was insignificant, he would think we're crazy. It's like Prabhupada wrote that essay, Who is Crazy? They think we're crazy. You see? Because for them, sex is the whole motivating principle of life. Actually, Freud has analyzed that everything here is based on sex. Prabhupada confirmed, yes, Freud was right in this material world. They base everything on sex. But for devotees, he is getting a taste better than sex. This is described by Rupa Goswami. Tunde tandamani vitengti vitinite tundavali labdiye. Karna kradaka dhammani gatiyate kunarvyade braspiham. Shaita pangana sangani vidayate frasarvendriyanam kritim. No jani janita kriyadbir amritai krishneti varna dvai. Varna is syllables. Dvai is two. What are those two syllables? Krishna. So, Rupa Goswami describes that when I vibrate Krishna, Krishna, the person, is dancing on my tongue. And there's so much nectar oozing out from Krishna that my one little mouth that just can't hold all that nectar. Therefore, please, I must have millions of mouths to capture that nectar, my Lord. And then he says, when Krishna enters the holes of my ears, there's so much nectar coming out of Krishna that my two little ears cannot hold that nectar. I need to have millions and billions and trillions of years to capture that nectar. And then when Krishna dances in the courtyard of my heart, my mind and my eyes are so pleased. My mind is completely captivated. And I'm paralyzed. I'm stunned in a state of transcendental bliss. So show me sex, an act of sex that'll give you that. Not possible. Even though it is a heavenly pleasure like the demigods for a few seconds, it's nothing, you see. Actually, sex is painful. It's simply a pain compared to the ecstasy of Krishna's name. So therefore, one who actually takes to Krishna bhakti, one who seriously takes to the pathway of Krishna consciousness, he can walk away from this sex life. Tapasa brahmacharena, no problem, you see. There's no problem. Vishayavani vartante nirahar rashi dehina rashavashang riyopta prasopyasra padang vishvani vartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So the key is, we got to get that higher taste. We have to get it. Otherwise, sooner or later, Mr. Lust will come knocking on our door and invite us on a little excursion somewhere. You see, we have to get that higher taste. Very, very essential thing. Our Jamanacharya Albanjo, he has very nicely given poetry. Yadavati mama cheta Krishna padara vinde Tadavati Bhattanari Sangame Smaryamani Bhavati Mukushushru Nishtivanamsha. Ever since I've been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, getting what? Nava Nava Rasa, newer and newer tastes, newer and sweeter, more enlivening, ecstatic ecstasies of bhakti. If somehow or other, due to my past activities as a king with my harem, if those memories of sex come into my brain, my lips curl with distaste and I spit at the thought. Yes. So, in this connection, Prabhupada said on the morning walk in Los Angeles, he said, the position of the sex, that how nasty it is. Then our Swarupa Damodar Maharaj, he was Brahmachari then, but he was, Prabhupada had him play the role of the scientist because he was a PhD in biology. He always took the role of the scientist and they'd have debate. So he said, but Prabhupada, how to continue the species? If we give up sex, Prabhupada said, you finish it, this condemned world. So, you know, we don't have a duty to have sex. If we all go back to Godhead, that's all right. We don't have to keep, you know, we're not duty-bound to have sex. Now, if somebody wants to be a householder and have some kids, that's great. We're not anti-sex. We're just anti-illicit sex. And Prabhupada makes it very clear what is the definition of illicit sex. You see, a householder, he's allowed to have sex once in a month just after the menstrual period of his wife. And he has to chant 50 rounds of japa. This is Prabhupada's instruction. 50, not 15, 50. The husband and wife both chant 50 rounds of japa. And Prabhupada also mentions you get the blessings of your Guru Maharaj first to try to have a child. He states that in his books. You get your Guru Maharaj's blessings, you chant the 50 rounds, and then once in a month after the menstrual cycle, you can have sex for procreation. I remember one time when I was a brahmachari back in the old days, around 73, I guess it was, 72. I was standing there in the yard in our Miami temple, and then one house order couple walk up, and the husband says to me, you know, Sankarsana Prabhu, I really wanted to share something with you. My wife and I, you know, we've been wanting to have a child, and we're following all the rules for household life, and last night we both chanted 50 rounds of japa each. And after we chanted those 50 rounds, we said, let's wait till next month to have sex. Because they got so much nectar for the name. So who wants to have sex? I mean, who wants to come down to the bodily platform of male, female? Here we are swimming in the ecstasy of Krishna Nam, you see. They actually decided to postpone sex for a month because they get so much nectar from those 50 rounds, you see. So this is proof that chanting is actually better than sex. It's proven, you see. So it's really not a difficult, it's not difficult if you have faith in this principle that chanting is better than sex. It's not difficult to be a brahmachari or a brahmachari grihastha, you see. See, any householders that don't follow this principle, they're not grihastha, they're grihamedi, you see. A householder will only have sex once in a month after 50 rounds. Otherwise, he's a grihamedi, he's not a grihastha, you see. And if he doesn't want to have a child, brahmachari, you see. In our movement, we have five kinds of brahmacharis. We have brahmachari brahmacharis, we got brahmacharini brahmacharis, we have grihastha brahmacharis, vanaprastha brahmacharis, and sannyasi brahmacharis. This is a brahmachari movement. Tapasa brahmacharena ki jai. Because we don't need sex. Sex is the binding knot of this material world, hridaya granti. We don't need it. It's just some hormones in your body anyway. It's not really you. There was one gentleman, he had some kind of cancer, and they gave him all these heavy drugs to kill all his male hormones. And he was amazed. He looked at women, he's just like a little baby again. It didn't mean anything. He was like a little baby. They killed his male hormones. So it's not really you that's lusty. It's just some little hormones going beep, 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 beep. It's not you. You see. So detach yourself from the body, you see. That's brahmachari consciousness. You have to detach yourself from your material body and the hormones and the urges your body feels, because it's not you. Simply whatever we need to keep body and soul together. And sex is not required. Now, if you feel it's required, your mind is disturbed, all right, you be a regulated householder. And that way satisfy your sex desire. We're not against sex satisfaction. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, I'm prepared to have sex life 100 times if I can produce saintly children. So sex is wonderful and it's used for Krishna. Krishna says, I am that sex. Balang balavatang chahang kama ragavivarjitam. That's a holy sacrament, actually. To have sex according to regulated principles is a holy sacrament. It's Krishna. So that sex is glorious. And that sex is produced very transcendentalist, like Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, you see. So we're not against that sex. Prabhupada encouraged our householders. He very much encouraged them, having Krishna conscious children. So in this way, we can understand the proper balance, you see. The Mayavadis, they cannot fathom this sort of a program. They have to simply deny this everything, you see. But in Krishna consciousness, we don't deny anything. We accept everything that can be utilized in the service of Krishna, and actually everything that exists is the energy of Krishna. We don't negate anything, you see. Everything is Krishna's energy, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. So everything is Krishna's energy. We simply have to offer it back to Krishna. This is the original principle of recycling. See, nowadays recycling means, well, you take something out of the earth, you have to recycle it. So this is the original philosophy of recycling, that everything is the energy of Krishna. You have to recycle it by offering it back to Krishna. Just like in material life, If you don't recycle something, you're creating pollution. So similarly, if you don't recycle the energy of Krishna back in the service of Krishna, you are polluting the atmosphere of the universe. So instead of polluting the atmosphere of the universe, we want to clean up the atmosphere of the universe. We want to spiritualize it. We want to Krishnize it by offering everything to Krishna. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshvaram suhridam sarvabhutanam yatvamam shantram richati. Krishna says, I'm the supreme enjoyer. I'm the owner of everything. I'm the best friend of all living entities, and only those who know this can be happy and peaceful in this world. So, why is Krishna the enjoyer? Because he's the owner. You see. It's natural. The one who owns something, he has the right to enjoy it. You see. It's like you may own an apartment. Well, it's your right to enjoy it. Not that somebody else can come and live in your apartment without your permission. Because you're the owner. The owner is the rightful enjoyer. So, Krishna is the owner of everything. Therefore, he is the rightful enjoyer of everything. The difficulty is, sometimes what happens when we see somebody else enjoying? What happens? We become envious. That's what got us into this, the material pickle. You see, we're pickled here in this material existence. Because we were envious of Krishna. Why, you could be the enjoyer. Why not me? You see? But this is less intelligence. Like the old classic example of the hand and the belly, you see. The hand is thinking, what is this nonsense? I have to feed, put this, take all this food and put it to the belly. What is this nonsense? The belly is sitting there enjoying. I'm just doing all this work, you see. Prabhupada gives an example. There's one example given in the Vedic scriptures. That, the parts of the body, they're thinking, what is this nonsense? Here we are serving the belly. The belly is simply enjoying. We will go on strike. You see? So all the bodily parts, they go on strike. You can imagine what they were chanting, you know. Don't feed the stomach. Don't feed the stomach. The stomach is a fascist pig. Don't feed the stomach. Don't feed the stomach. With great enthusiasm, they were marching back and forth with their picketing, their signs, protesting against this pig stomach, just eating, enjoying our hard labor. So for the first day, with great enthusiasm, they were carrying on with their demonstration. The second day, they somehow were losing their energy a little bit. And for the third day, they were going, don't feed the stomach. Don't feed the stomach. I think we better have another meeting of the labor union. So they called off a strike. Because actually, you have to feed the stomach. The bodily parts have to feed the stomach, otherwise everybody suffers, you see. So, if you want to actually be happy, you have to feed the stomach. You have to serve Krishna. Because you are part of Krishna, when you serve Krishna, you're automatically served along with Krishna, you see. When you serve Krishna, everyone becomes served. When you love Krishna, you love everything because everything is part of Krishna. So, even when you love Krishna, you love yourself also. You're not leaving yourself out. You see? So that's such a nice philosophy, Krishna consciousness philosophy. This movement, with this philosophy, with this lifestyle, with these teachings, this movement can solve all the problems of the entire world. This movement can unite everyone, Christians, Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, Jains, atheists, agnostics, hedonists. Everybody can be united by this Krishna consciousness movement. So we have to, therefore, cultivate this Krishna consciousness very seriously within our hearts. This is a two-pronged process. Bahir nasingha, hridaye nasingha. Prabhupada describes in the Bhagavatam purport in the fifth canto. Bahir nasingha, hridaye nasingha. My dear Lord, please, well, be fully manifested in my heart, driving away all the dirt from my heart. See, that's hridaye nasingha. And please allow me to bring peace to the entire world. Prabhupada translates it like this, Bakir Nisinga. So we want to revolutionize our hearts, and we want to revolutionize the entire human society. But of the two, ourselves is more important. Prabhupada said the most important thing is to save the world, and even more important is to save yourself. If you can't save yourself, you can't save anybody. So our first duty is to save ourselves, is to become fixed up in Krishna consciousness. Try to develop love for Krishna, really love for Krishna, you see, true love for Krishna. That is our first and foremost duty that each and every one of us has. We have to try to awaken that original dormant love of Krishna within the heart. I remember back in 75, I was there in Atlanta. It was a big mela. So many devotees had come. It was a wonderful gathering of devotees from all over the place came. And Prabhupada was giving so many wonderful lectures. He even taught a song class on Parama Karuna. It was really, really sweet. But I remember in the Sunday feast lecture, my godbrother Narendra Prabhu came back. He came off the road with his Sankirtan party. He said, "Prabhupada, what pleases you the most?" Prabhupada was always emphasizing book distribution. So we were all thinking, what's Prabhupada going to say? And Prabhupada said, if you love Krishna. So the very most important thing, whatever your service is, whether you're a book distributor, a pujari, a GBC, a guru, a Gurukula teacher, whatever service you, whatever position you have, a mother, a father, whatever position you have in our Krishna consciousness movement, the most important thing that each and every one of us must try to do is try to develop our love for Krishna. I remember this is what attracted me. When I first met devotees in San Francisco back in 68, and then in Berkeley in 69, I was a little put off. It was like boot camp. It looked to me like boot camp, you know. I had my long hair and my beard, and I was enjoying as a musician, you know. But they wanted me to look like being a Marine or something. I said, this is too weird. I liked the chanting and the prasadam. That was great. But the lifestyle, brahmachari, it was like, are you kidding? But then later on, I met Vishnu Janaswamy. And his mood wasn't like, fall in line, soldier. It was not his mood. His mood was, give your love to Krishna. And that really appealed to me. Not rules and regulations, but, you know, bhakti, love for God, love for Krishna. So that is the essence. Is this the International Society for Rules and Regulations? No. This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So how conscious are we of Krishna? Are we of Krishna at every minute? That we have to see. Am I conscious when I wake up in the morning? Am I conscious at this moment, at that moment? Am I always conscious of Krishna? Is he? We should take lesson from Akrura. He was very, very Krishna conscious. He was coming on the chariot from Mathura to pick up Krishna. He was totally absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna. So much so, he couldn't even understand how long he'd been on the road, on the chariot drive. He lost all track of time. He entered into a state of timelessness, simply meditating on Krishna, 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 Krishna. And then, just as the sun was setting, it'd be a great movie. It'd be a great scene. Hollywood should do this movie. But the sun is setting, and you can just imagine 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan, it's sunset, and a Akrura pulls into Vrindavan, and he looks on the ground, he sees all the cow prints, the hoof print of the cows, and then in the midst of those hoof print of the cows, he sees these wonderful footprints. And in that footprint, he sees the flag. He sees the trident. He sees the thunderbolt. He sees the lotus flower. And whose footprint is that? Krishna. He goes into ecstasy. He gets down from the chariot. His body, his eyes are, his tears are flying out of his eyes. His body is trembling. And he just rolls in the dust in ecstasy. So Prabhupada says, this is in the Krishna book, it's described very nicely by Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, this should be our mood when we enter Vrindavan. He said, you cannot come to enter Vrindavan by purchasing a ticket. This is the mood. We have to pray, take Akrura as our six gurus. My dear Akrura, you please bless me now. Now I am entering into Vrindavan. You please bless me now. I can understand your mood and try to feel and experience Vrindavan as you experience Vrindavan. Prabhupada says that Vrindavan is Krishna himself. So being in contact with this Dham, we are directly in contact with Krishna. So we have to take full advantage of this Dham and carry this Dham with us wherever we go. Actually, one of the first 10 items of bhakti is given by Srila Prabhupada in the Nectar Devotion. You have to live in Vrindavan, or Dwarka, Prabhupada says in this Krishna Nectar Devotion. Well, but I have my service. I'm a temple president, I'm a GBC, I'm a traveling guru, I'm a businessman. How can I stay in Vrindavan? Well, you have to carry Vrindavan in your heart. That's all. You have to live wherever there is Krishna, there is Vrindavan. So we're always thinking about Krishna, how beautiful is Krishna, how powerful is Krishna, how renounced is Krishna. In spite of so many gopi girlfriends, there is no sex connection. How renounced is Krishna? How wealthy is Krishna? How knowledgeable is Krishna? How famous is Krishna? By always staying absorbed in all these wonderful aspects of Krishna, his name, his fame, his pastimes, his entourage, his paraphernalia, his dham, always diving deeper, deeper, deeper into Krishna, 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 Krishna. Then we will always be living in Vrindavan. Prabhupada very nicely explains in his purport to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text number 15. He says here that the realized devotees, they have no desire to live on any material planet. Yeah, we can understand that pretty easily. But he says, and also they don't have any desire to live on any spiritual planet. They only desire Krishna and Krishna's association. So what does that mean? That means the realized devotees that we hope we can become someday, you see, they're actually directly in contact with Krishna. They don't need to be in Goloka Vrindavan because they're already in Goloka Vrindavan within their hearts. Great devotees like Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, these great realized devotees, they're living in Vrindavan at every minute because they're simply always associating with Krishna. Prabhupada one time gave me a wonderful instruction in this connection. When I joined ISKCON, everybody could write Prabhupada a letter. It was open. I had a question one time, and Vishwajan Swami didn't know the answer. Why don't you write Prabhupada? So it was very nice. Days of our movement, everybody had the chance they could personally write Srila Prabhupada a letter. So I did that and got some wonderful replies. For several letters, and then there was a new policy. Only temple presidents, sannyasis, and GBCs should write letters, and everyone asks your temple president, sannyasi, and GBC your questions. Well, I was a little bit, you could say, of a renegade brahmachari. I wanted that contact with Prabhupada. So I really gambled. I wrote a letter to Prabhupada. I didn't put my name on the return address, hoping it would get through the security. And it did. And Prabhupada is very merciful. He reminded me of the policy. He told me the policy. And then he said, but if there is an urgent need, he told me, I'm always happy to hear from my beloved disciples. So Prabhupada gave me a loophole. If I had an urgent need, I had an exemption to the policy. Prabhupada was so kind. So I wrote a few more letters after that. But by doing that, I gradually became a little more sane and realized that I was already having connection with Prabhupada without having to write the letters. But Prabhupada is very kind and very merciful to me. So I always remember that even though it was such a great burden for him to take on all this correspondence while he's trying to write his book, still, if somebody was having difficulty, they really felt they needed it, in spite of the policy, he was willing to put the policy aside and take care of that disciple. So I always remember that how loving and how kind Prabhupada was. And actually, it's that loving kindness of Srila Prabhupada which is the very substance of our movement. Our movement is not the buildings. It's not the bank accounts or the vehicles or any of this stuff. Our movement is simply the loving relationships that we have with each other, and they're all coming out of that love that Srila Prabhupada has for each and every one of us. So by connecting with this wonderful love of Srila Prabhupada and trying to share it with everybody, you see, then we can easily forget about the lust. We'll have no problem giving up this lust dust described in today's verse. So we have a couple of minutes left. Is there any questions? Yes, Prabhu. I'll try to hear, but pretty deaf, but I'll give it a good shot, yeah.
You spoke, Sankarshan Prabhu, about toward the end of your lecture about realized devotees that we hope to be someday, or something to that effect, are always sincerely in touch with Krishna.
Do you have it written down? Oh, okay.
I made a note.
Okay, let me take it piece by piece, because I can't hear a word you're saying. I have him convey it to me. What is it saying? Oh, yeah, the realized devotees, okay.
Yeah, you mentioned realized devotees are always directly in touch with Krishna.
That's right.
And you mentioned that we hope to be someday realized devotees.
That's right.
But, and you also mentioned that grihasthas are grihamedis unless they strictly follow the principle of only having sex for the purpose of procreation.
That's right. That's correct.
Is there any latitude for those of us ashram who may have not been directly in touch with Krishna yet, it takes some time, or just following Vaidhi Bhakti under regulation. Is it understood on some level?
Prabhupada is very lenient. Even if we're falling down and not following the principles, Prabhupada keeps giving the mercy and giving the mercy and giving the mercy. Brahmacharis sometimes also have difficulty with sex desire. They do things they're not supposed to do. That happens sometimes. But in spite of that, nobody is rejected. The love is given, the love is given, the love is given, the love is given. And by that love, gradually, we realize, hey, what am I doing? Why am I wasting my time with this nonsense?
I just
want
to know if it's understood that devotees shouldn't beat themselves up to the point sometimes devotees committed suicide because they couldn't follow that particular principle of no sex.
Even a sannyasi is known for having done that. So that is certainly against Prabhupada's teachings. Prabhupada never wanted somebody who's falling down enough, not able to follow the principles, to commit suicide or to leave the movement. This is a movement based on love and forgiveness and tolerance. This reminds me of the biblical story of Lord Jesus. There was some prostitute, and according to strict Jewish laws, she was being stoned to death. And the priests were there stoning her and telling all the people to stone her to death. And Christ said, "He who is without sin, let him cast the first stone." They all dropped their stone. You see. So, why can we? We're all. Who of us can say we're a pure devotee? We're free from dirt. You see, none of us can claim that. Even if some of us have achieved that state, they would always present themselves very humbly as a fallen soul. You see. So we are very, very tolerant and forgiving. But at the same time, we want to know everyone should know what the standard is. The standard is clearly stated here. If we can't keep up to the standard, all right. Keep trying. Keep praying, keep chanting, and someday you will come to that standard. Prabhupada mentioned this point in the Bhagavad Gita Purport. Even if one cannot follow, as long as he is not resentful of the principle, you see, then he will gradually overcome it. Let's say I'm a householder, I'm having sex once a week, okay, because I just can't do once a month. I've got to have it once a week. I'm too agitated, right? But I understand it's not really the right thing, and I'm praying to Krishna that I can come to the standard of once in a month, you see. Then Krishna will accept. Oh, he knows it's wrong. He accepts the principle once a month as a standard. He wants to come to it. He's weak. But in this way, he'll gradually recover from it, you see. Someday you might even be a sannyasi. You see? You may even be a sannyasi someday. When he was a house order in the beginning, he couldn't control himself. He's having sex every once a week. But because he accepted this was not right, but I know it's not right. But not that we legitimize, not that we should legitimize it, saying, yeah, it's okay. It's like when I gave initiation to one girl in Bulgaria. I said, what are the four principles? She said, no sex outside of marriage. I said, wait a minute. That's not the regulated principle. You see? It's not that we legitimize it. At the same time, we don't condemn someone who's having difficulty. We're even more kind. You see, those who are having difficulty, we're even more kind and considerate of them. Not that, oh, get out of here, you're not. No, please come here. Let me see how I can help you. Explain how I overcame the desire. You see, the householders are able to follow. They should guide those who are not able to follow. This is how I overcame it. Explain to them. Share our own experiences. And help them. Okay, here's another one. Sometimes issues of great significance divide devotees. So what is the process of dealing with the issue without destroying relationships? I've gone through a lot of this myself, my relationship with devotees. But what I've realized is every issue has more than one side. Practically every issue has more than one side, you see. So you should, when there's an issue you're having with somebody over some point, try to see it from their perspective. Also, don't be narrow-minded. Yeah, only my way is the way of seeing it. Don't be narrow-minded. One should always be open-minded. What is, all right, I'm really convinced according to Prabhupada's teachings this is the way it should be, but this devotee feels it the other way. Let me hear and see, and from what their viewpoint is, maybe my viewpoint will change. When I hear their viewpoint, let me always be open to hear the other side of the issue. You see? Always be open. Never like, you know, my way or the highway kind of a philosophy. How do you see it, Prabhu? Always hear from the other perspective. You see? In this way, if we're always willing to hear from each other the different perspectives we have on different things, different aspects, then in this open-minded, loving mood, Krishna will become manifest in due course of time. Krishna will become fully manifest. Even in the spiritual world, there's different viewpoints. There's Chandravali's camp, there's Radhavati's camp, there's the left wing and right wing, dopis, there's even, you know, these controversies even there in the spiritual world. So we should never let controversies split this movement apart. We should always remain together in spite of whatever controversies we may have, different viewpoints on different things. I may disagree with you, but I love you. In this way, we have to always stay together. Prabhupada's order, the famous order, your love for me will be seen by how much you cooperate. So we may not agree. Even Prabhupada points out in his Bhagavatam purport, in spiritual life, differences of opinion are spiritual. You see? So we have to find a way to work together in spite of differences of opinion, and they do happen quite often, as a fact. Quite often we have differences of opinion. But if we actually love Prabhupada, we actually want to reciprocate with that love that he's giving us, we will find a way to work together cooperatively even with our differences of opinion. So, I'll stop here. And I thank you all very, very much for participation in this movement. You're encouraging me to be Krishna conscious. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.